You are listening to The Weekend Chapter on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Thank you so much for joining us right here on Adventist World Radio, powered by the SID Media. It is still The Weekend Chapter, and around this hour, you know how we do it. This is when we get to talk to the movers and shakers. These are the people who are making an impact in society. So this evening we've got a lady who's doing some phenomenal work. She has been doing phenomenal work throughout the years, and she continues, you know, to excel in the different fields that she is in. So this is none other than my mother, Mrs. Maureen Ngwenya. Mom, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, my son. Thank you for having me.
Beautiful. In Shona we say audize mine zitaka andiri piswe rero ndono.
not even, you know, you get so used to hearing your name coming from young mouths to an extent that you then just add aunt at the end so that you can call me Aunt Maureen.
Beautiful. Anyway, I'm so glad to finally have you on the show, Mom, and so many questions that are coming through to my mind right now. But the first one that I'm going to ask is this. Of course, we've come to know Mrs. Ngwenya. We've come to know Mrs. Maureen Ngwenya over the years. I think the first time I saw you was when you came through to our local church here. And it was back in the day. I was still a young fella. And we told, no, Mrs. Ngwenya, she's coming to preach. And you came with a truck. I don't know if you still remember those days. You came with a truck. It was a Gwenyeti. Jim Soreje Gwenyeti. And then you came. I'm like, powerful woman. That was DZ main. You came through, you're giving us a week of prayer, and then I'm like, okay, now this is different.
Oh wow. Okay. I don't remember much, you know. You will understand why, you know, time, you're also talking of a Gwenyet. I think it was just a big truck, not even the way you describe it, but maybe from your young mind, it was exactly what you saw.
But I'm beautiful nonetheless. Beautiful. Of course, I started knowing you as a preacher, but of course, I've always had this question, like, so who is this lady? Who is this lady, Maureen, before she became Mrs. Ngwenya? Where does she come from? Tell us about the family you were born into and how you grew up.
Okay, thank you so much. I could spend the whole day talking about my background. But in as much as I'll say something about it, I want you to know that I have all that in a book that I wrote called Seasons. But I am, I'm a Chifamba. My maiden name is Chifamba, born and bred in Gweru, went to school in Gweru. I'm the second born in a family of six. Maybe let me say eight, because my parents went on then to adopt two other young men who have become part of our lives. But my biological siblings were born four ladies who are now grannies in their, you know, old age, and my two brothers, one who is late. Both my parents are late. But I went to school in Gweru. My primary school, I did it in Gweru at a school called Buburi, and then I went to Ascot for my high school. From then on, I went to teaching. From teaching, that's where I met my husband. Whilst I was teaching at a school near their home, I met my husband, and then I got married. I came to Harare. That's the bit of background I can give you.
Amazing. So, growing up, who is the people that influenced you a lot? Do you say inspired you to become the woman that you are today?
I think of, if I think back, I think my mother was my greatest influence, honestly, because my mother was a prayerful woman. She did not train me like, you know, but I admired her life. I did not admire it. Let me be honest. I did not admire her life because it was all about prayer and preaching and going to these, church meetings, Mazunde. And I used to say, My mother, you know, she's an angel. One found out because she lived that kind of life. Everything about her was prayer, prayer. And during those days, she did not, she just lived a life and we copied. When we also became independent, that's when I began to realize the importance of the life that she was leading. And I, without really knowing, I slid into the roles that my mother used to play. And kind of, I would go with her. I enjoyed the preaching, the singing, the witnessing. And I think that's where my journey started with these Zunde meetings where we would go for 3 days per month. I would look forward to them. The youth camps, yes, but they did not usher me into the preaching ministry, but it was the Zundes. That's where I got my training mainly from.
Ah, amazing. Ah, amazing story right there. And then I'm also thinking, you mentioned about teaching. So teaching was like your dream job growing up.
No, not even. I did not even want to be a teacher. But you know, I did not pass my O-levels immediately. You know, I did not do well with my O-levels. So I had to supplement, but whilst I was supplementing, I went into temporary teaching. Whilst I was supplementing my O-levels, I had to go into temporary teaching, yes. So it was something that I think now when I look on hindsight, I think it was just God's big plan so that I meet my husband. Because the day that I went to, that I was transferred to the school near my late husband's home was the day that his parents died. That's where I met him, at his parents' funeral. And I was just there by coincidence, because the reason why I was transferred was not very clear, because I was transferring from another Adventist school to this one. I did not even like the transfer. I did not appreciate it, although I was coming from a very remote place to come to a place near town, near Kwekwe. My appreciation for the transfer was very low. So the day that I arrived at that school, that was the day Sekuru Nbuyagwenya died in a car accident. And because we, you know, teachers in a community, we had to attend this way, community leaders. There were church and community leaders both. So we had to attend the funeral as staff members, because they had at one time taught the school that I was now transferred to. So, yeah, I did not like teaching at all, but, you know, it's something that was available then.
Okay. So, of course, I'm intrigued already with, the love story that you have just painted right there. And I'm thinking, wow, this is a situation where people are grieving. Was this like love at first sight, Mama?
That's why I said, my son, you need to buy this book. You need to read, not even buy, you need to read my book called My Seasons of Life, Love, Loss, Hope, and Healing. It was not even love at first sight. When I first met him, I saw him from a distance. The way the scene was, it was such a grim scene. People were grieving, and you know, these are. It was not just the two parents. It was also the uncle. So it was the uncle, the father, and the mother who had perished in that car accident. But because they had the elders had said there was not going to be anybody viewing. So we're just sitting, observing. Remember, I've just arrived at this school. I didn't even have a friend or anyone I knew. So I was just sitting amongst people, but on my own. Everyone was related to the funeral in one way or another. Whether they were staff members, they knew these people. I didn't know them. I just knew their name because of being in the Adventist community. So when they said that there was not going to be body viewing, this man who then became my husband took some, you know, he stood up, walked to the coffins, opened, you know, it was a harsh moment, because they had announced that there was not going to be body viewing, and he was defying all those announcements, and he walked on to where the coffins were, opened the coffins, and, you know, took some time to view his father, closed, opened his mother's coffin, took some time and closed and walked away. So that's the first time that I was seeing him, but not that I admired him. I actually felt like, if this guy had a girlfriend, where is the girlfriend? This is the time where someone, you should show your support. This guy needs support. Why is he walking alone? Where are his friends? Where is everyone? You know, I was like, he needed someone by his side, but not that I felt anything because he was too far. I didn't even see his features. I wouldn't have recognized him even if I met him the following morning. But it was the act that really caught my heart. And I kept saying, I wish he had someone to walk with him. Now look, he's walking away alone. And these are questions that I was saying in my head. These are conversations that I was having in my head. I could not have them with anyone. So yeah, that was my first encounter with Ayachi.
Wow, amazing. I'm thinking this is quite a scene right there. He wished that he had someone to you know, to hold his hand at such a time. But now there you are. This is the guy that you went on to spend life with, and you know, had a very beautiful lengthy marriage with. So how was it like in marriage life, married to this man, having met in such very unusual circumstances? How was it like, the marriage life for you?
We then later met at a youth camp, and I was then introduced formally. Then they said, oh, this is the guy. But nothing happened then, and it was just like an introduction. You know, but when I, let me fast forward, I get married to this amazing guy. My husband was an amazing person. And those who know me, or those who knew us as a couple back then, will testify that I was blessed to have been married to such a... I was really blessed. So, yes, I don't have much to say in 30 minutes, but all I can say, it was the most beautiful experience of my time. And some of the things I...
Amazing. However, 2013, if I recall, if I'm really recalling correctly, that's when tragedy struck. And you lost this amazing man, and from what I heard is that there was you only found out that he had cancer like a few weeks before his death. So now, how do you handle such a blow?
I don't think there's a formula. There is no easy way of losing a loved one, and it's, you know, it's not like a wedding where you say I'll do this from A I'm going to B. There's no formula. It doesn't have a pattern. There's no linear program where you can say, I'll follow this. You just float in life, and God will. You know, what I then realized, maybe, let me say, what I now know on hindsight is that God is in it, or God was in it all the way. When I lost my husband, I didn't know. I couldn't find myself. I didn't know this was me. It was not my life. It was not what I signed up for. But, you know, I just want to thank God that it was only God. It was only the grace of God that carried me through that season, and still is, because it's not a journey where you arrive at a certain destination. You only get in, and then you find yourself floating, and, you know, God finds you, redeems you, creates another path for you. You never go back to your original self, because it's that brokenness. You are no longer the same person, but, you know, when we look at it, we just see the grace of God, because we could have died by just going through what we went through. It's not something that you want to, even your worst enemy, to go through. It's not, that experience is devastating, it's life-changing. It's just so consuming, you know. It's yeah, that's all I can say. I didn't know how to find myself, but God found me. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know where to place my feet.
So now, does this affect you spiritually? Does this make you stop doing what you're doing? Does this stop you from preaching or from attending events where you are called out to come and present. How do you handle this? How exactly does this affect your spiritual life?
It does, to a certain extent, it does. Because I had a lot of questions. I was angry. I looked at my life. I didn't know how to go on. And my husband was, you know, such a, you know, central focus in my life. And everything was around him, about us. And yes, I continue repeating these words that even my faith took a deep knock. There was a time that I didn't feel like praying, or that I didn't see the point of, you know, continuing to preach. But yeah, God is graceful. God is gracious. In a way, He then allowed me to heal. And it was not an overnight thing. It was a journey. It was a struggle whereby it's belief against disbelief, or this thought and that thought. But yeah, finally, you know, God wins. God wins. Wow. Because we didn't know anything else apart from trusting God. We didn't have options. For me, I didn't have options. So it was just God. Even my anger fit and ask God questions. And, you know, I'd search the Bible. Yeah, I would ask questions. If people were praying, I would say, but I have this question. I want to understand this. And, you know, God took me through that whole journey, even though at times people did not know how to address my questions. But God, you know, moment by moment was holding my hand through that dark maze.
Well,
people would invite me to do presentations. I remember one time in that very year when my husband died, I think it was like 4 months after that, I was invited to go and do a widows and singles thing. I was so angry. I said, I've just been widowed. What lessons, even though I'm an evangelist or a preacher, I'm still needing also to heal. Why do people think that I can stand up and do? Actually, that whole year, I did not preach. I could not preach without breaking down. Well, I did not. I just told myself, 2013 is my sabbatical. I'm just grieving for my husband. I'm mourning my husband. I'm not going to accept any preaching appointment. And when I started to preach in 2014, it was like, well, the mourning period is over. So this is the agreement that I had. Well, for me, life is an agreement with God. If I set myself up for anything, so I said to myself, 2014, I'll start preaching. And true to His word, God, January of 2014, I was invited to a ladies' retreat. And why I accepted that retreat was because it was going to happen in Nyanga. And Nyanga was one of our holiday destinations. So I just wanted also closure with the place. I took that appointment mainly just for selfish reasons, to say I'll go, but I also want to visit the room, that the house that we used to stay in, and see if I can heal, if I can find. I was groping for answers and healing from any source of any source of comfort. And when I went there, it was so difficult because I would, in the, you know, songs triggered, would trigger me easily. So when people started singing for the preacher to stand up, I failed. I had to go out. I broke down, went out, you know, and went back to the stage and preached. That was the first time that I really managed to preach. But on several occasions, I would struggle with music and preaching. But bit by bit, we got there.
Wow, bit by bit. You got there. And some years down the line, 2019, 2020, COVID-19 comes through. And then during that period, something phenomenal happened. This is when you established an organization for fellow widows. Now, this is I remember you speaking glowingly about this organization and how you started, and how it wasn't like an intention for you to start an organization, but something happened. Take us through those days, Mama, and give us info how you're feeling and how things transpired then.
Okay, so I lost my husband 2018, and 2019, yes, COVID hit. 2019, I think during 2019, some people reached out to me to talk to their loved ones about loss. And I had been talking about my loss using it as an example, my experience, and I was so vocal about it. So people then started, because of that, people started reaching out to me. And I formed a small group of 8 ladies. It was not ladies only, it was also men and women, young people. And, you know, the numbers kept increasing. And I said, Lord, I can only deal with 20 people. I think if they get more than this, it might be overwhelming. So in the middle of that, I was then asked also to do a devotional. Now that is, this is 2020, I was asked to do 31 devotionals in the month of August for widows and orphans. I struggled because it was when we were just starting to use social media to preach. Mm-hmm. And I was not used to using, you know, I was not familiar with this new style of preaching. And, you know, we are that type that gets energy from the feedback of your audience. Now I'm preaching mm-hmm. to a gadget. There is no feedback, and you are not sure whether you are communicating or not, and you self-doubt yourself. Then, lo and behold, God in his faithfulness, we did it successfully with Akula Ndaba. He took me through the whole process. He was very patient with me, and I thank God for him. I think that was my introduction to social media preaching or something. And then I did the interview. Mandara then saw those 31 devotionals, and let me not mention names, that elder of Mandara requested me to do devotionals in Shona. And I said, no, I don't think I can, but let me write just a synopsis of questions that you can give me an interviewer, and then I can answer. And in the process, I'll be also ministering to widows and orphans. I did a four-part series, which went viral. I remember one of the widows saying, I was in a doctor's surgery waiting to be attended when I saw you on TV. And her name was called for her to get into the doctor. And she says, no, I want to finish this interview. I also want the numbers of this lady. So I would put my numbers out there. She reached out to me. And then another radio station reached out to me, can you please also do our grief and relief segment? I accepted that because it was fun. I used it to working on social media, but all these platforms were different, just like yours is also different. And then I did that grief and relief segment for that radio. That's when but that one was difficult because I was responsible for content creation. So I invited some young people. I would invite men to come and talk about their widowhood, their lost children. And this time I invited 4 young widows. So amongst the widows, one of them was 23 years old and she had lost her mother and husband in a week, actually 3 days apart. This was a young lady who was studying medicine, had come back from Germany to get married, but then COVID closed her in, so she could not go back. And in the process, she lost her husband. That very husband she had come to marry and her mother. So it was very sad. It triggered everyone in the studio, even the producers. We all, you know, broke down because it was so painful. Long and short, with it, I then said, you know, I need to do something. Let me do a lunch for the widows. That's when there was a window was opened for people to mingle. And I did a lunch. I told the 4 ladies, you know what, let's invite as many widows as we can, because I wanted to do lunch for the 4. But then I said, no, I have that group. I put the invite on the other group, which had about 14, 12 people now, and this plus this 4. So the ladies invited went all out. Not everyone from the group came, but we had a lunch for 22 widows. And, you know, they would come into my yard. I didn't know what to do with them because this was, you know, I didn't have a script for the lunch. What type of lunch would we have with widows who are broken? So they would come in and break down. So we had a cry party. We had a cry party that day from 11 to 5 p.m. We had lunch, finally, photos, a bit of laughter. And, you know, everyone told their story. So the introductions were like, you tell us who you are and what happened to you. So we would not stop anyone because some of them had not even had a gathering. So this was the first gathering. So they would wail and would wail together. Yeah. From there, the following month, we then said, okay, so do we need to meet again? Let me say, yeah, I think we need it was therapeutic. We're feeling better. We're feeling better. Okay, so let's meet again next month. Next month, 30 came. The following month, 80 came. And the numbers continued to grow until someone said, I don't think this is healthy for you to be having these meetings at your home because you are going to attract thieves. Why don't you look for a venue? We were given a venue at Mandara. And now the numbers were growing exponentially because a donor had brought some groceries for our December, some Christmas, you know, donors, not one. There were many donors. Some brought bread, furniture, clothing, groceries, food. And now those other widows who had long lost their husbands, now yet there was a widow who is giving out, you know, goodies. So the numbers multiplied. Oh, and I didn't know what to do with them. At 600, 800. Now, we formed WhatsApp groups. These WhatsApp groups, what do we do with them? I invited pastors to talk about state of the dead, to talk about where their loved ones, the second coming. I was desperate. Then I chose a committee to say, okay, what can we do with these women? And someone said, I think you should register a trust. This is amazing. We are healing. And I could see those that I had met in the first meeting, now their faces were bright. They looked forward to every meeting. They were the ones who would be here early organizing everything. And, you know, it was like a miracle because it would like be like, you know, the Bethesda pool where people would step in and find healing when they were telling their testimonies, whether we all broke down. But the end of it, people would go away feeling better because they had found that safe space, people who spoke the same language, people who understood what they were going through, than being in a pool of people who are, you know how pity disempowers.
Yes.
But here we're not doing pity parties because we're of the same language, same situation. So everyone felt they drew strength from another and I would give power talks, invite other speakers, invite, you know, empowerment, financial empowerment, social connections. We had lunch teas, small breakaway groups according to communities. You do what you can and let's do business, come together as widows, you know, and the group started growing. And so it has been a journey from 2020 to 2025. We're granted a private voluntary organization status. And we now have an office in town. We now are dreaming bigger. And, you know, we are also realizing that every day we have a widow who is ushered onto the platform. And we are making plans to say, how can they live better? We don't want them to go through what we went through. For some of us, in 7 years, there was no one to relate to. Not that there were no widows, but, you know, when someone loses after you, you can say, oh, so it's happening. But they were the widows that were losing after me were far away from my communities, my church community, my home community. There was no one around my community that I would go and relate to. Maybe one lady who had remarried. So I was left like alone. So I didn't understand this journey. I was not yet that old. I was only 46, but I was not young anymore. I didn't know how to tango, how to relate with the married community. The singles community were used to their journey, even in church. So it was a difficult time, but it was also a transition. And I realized that as I was ministering to them, I was getting stronger and healing because I looked at them and felt so some of our widows, even the one that I spoke about, she was only 23. And here I was, she was half my age. She was my child. So I would look at them and feel sorry. So is 20, I'm 46, and this is 23. She has a baby. She has no husband, no mother too. So I would adopt them. Some of them, I make them my own, and I'll visit them. I would just do all that I could until I realized, this is not, it's not going to be like this. COVID is here. We didn't know it was going to end. We thought COVID was here to kill, and we were just waiting. Ah, before we die, let's do life. Let's just live. Yeah, so yeah, let's do life. So we would have luncheons, breakfast meetings, dinners, would have workshops, would visit farms. If we had a widow who had a farm, would go and visit a farm, just to encourage her, see what she's doing. And other farmers would also come in, because remember, it ushered in a lot of widows all at once. And some of them were left with companies, were left with farms that didn't know what to do, were left with mines. And what we then did was, okay, we will attach you to this department, government department, let them help you with no know-how. So we would gather people of the same interest to say, well, how can we continue? And all those who did not know, or who did not have any special skill, we started introducing new skills so that they could live with their orphans. We didn't want a widow to be a sorry story. We didn't want a widow to be disempowered by, because what we've realized in Africa, a man doesn't just die, they are killed by their spouse. Even if they die of COVID, why didn't you also die of COVID? If they have an accident, what did you do? So it's an African thing that in Africa, a man just doesn't die. So we are just empowering. Some of them are disinherited. They are chased out of the matrimonial homes because people think they are too young. They will bring in boyfriends. You know, all sorts of people. This widow heals, the family is already, you know, chasing her away. But there are also good stories, whereby we also have good testimonies of in-laws, of churches, communities, the organizations that come in to help, to the aid of those widows.
Wow, amazing. No, you're very passionate about this organization, Mama. Trust me, you can talk all day about this. And so many testimonies, really. And all right, but one thing I've picked up, Mama, from all this that we've talked about is that you seem to be someone who embraces every season, or who has embraced every season of their life. And as we're about to close, what do you say to people, really? There are others who are young, who are still trying to find their feet, careers. You told us about teaching. There are others who are also taking their first steps into marriage as well. You know, that's another phase in a phase in life. And then there are others also who have faced this situation, widowhood. It's something that someone doesn't plan for, it happens. But from what I've said, you have embraced every situation, every should you say stage of life, everything that is that life is thrown to you, and you've managed to come out with something good from it. So what do you tell us, is all those who are listening, as you are looking back at your life and, you know, reminiscing in all this that you've told us?
For every young person, whatever age, maybe not just young people, because I know your station, it's a worldwide radio, but life happens to all of us and we have no formula. But what I would want to recommend or suggest is that a relationship with God will always see you through, because even when you don't have answers, God says, I'm your exceeding great reward. In every situation, when we do not have answers, God might be silent, but he, in the process, he is answering. You know, I might not have healed quickly, but God already had my back. And I continue even now to see his hand of mercy move so many times in my life. And the word of God is our, what can I say, is our strength. When we have the word of God, when we have God in our lives, even when we do not understand, I remember reading somewhere in the book of Job, where Job was complaining to God, where he had all these questions, until in chapter 39, God says, okay, get up, let's talk man to man. And, you know, I love the fact that God understands us beyond ourselves. We do not understand our own journeys. That's why he says, I know the plans that are here for you. But having a relationship with God is the only way you can sail through. Relationships, I can talk from morning till evening about relationships as a young person also. I was in disappointing relationships that I thought this was it, but it was not it. And then later on, when I got married to my husband, I realized this was the best relationship that God had for me. Had I been in any of those, because you meet those same people in life and you realize this would have been my life. This would have been my life. But the way that God then orchestrated for me is still such a wonder. The fact that I went to teach at his school, the fact that, you know, the whole thing is just God and God alone. It was God shifting things, moving days, moving everything. He needed someone to walk with him, someone who, I don't know, but I felt like we're good for each other. We're okay for each other. We had a beautiful life. We were friends. He was my best friend. And I think for young people, marry your friends. Not marry the container. Marry your friend, because you young people are much more for the trophy, the container. And there are so many other things that are important in life that you cannot do away with. So marry someone that you can actually be vulnerable with, and they'll understand you. Not someone, you marry someone and then you are busy walking on eggshells. You don't know if you are okay. You know, I was myself throughout that marriage. I was me, faults and all. And I knew that my husband loved me and understood me beyond, you know. Yeah. And then for people who are going through something difficult, I will say life can throw curveballs in your path, but it's not the end. God never gives big wars to small soldiers. If God allows it, it means he has grace. God will never lead you where his grace cannot carry you. Whenever you find yourself in a situation, ask yourself, where is my God? Because he says, when you go through the fire, I will be with you. He loves you so much that even in the fire, he will come for you. In the waters, he will not allow them to sweep you. So just that knowledge, because God says, my people perish for lack of knowledge. If you know who you are in Christ, that has been my mainstay, that I know that God loves me. I know that, yes, I might not understand this. You know, I would vacillate between, you know, this question and that question, but still I would go back to say, Lord, help me. Please help me. You know, I would find verses coming that had meaning. Music began to have another meaning. I had friends, I had pastors, people, the communities around me were very supportive, very, very supportive. And I think that's what we also need. If we have people who are going through, do not stay away from them. Please get close. You might not have a word to say to them. You just do what we call ministry of presence. Your presence in their life, checking upon them. How are you? How are you doing? How are you coping? And also, I want for the widows, I want them to know that no one is coming. You cannot depend on people who have not committed to helping you. We want to remove that dependent syndrome and live the way we can. God has empowered me to live. I might not be where I want to be, but I'm not struggling. And it is only God who says, I am a husband to widows, and he will take you through, be it whatever challenges, Marvin. I think I cannot finish this, but what I know is that God is our only source of hope. He is our only source of strength. Anything outside God, anything outside the cross is just but temporary, and pain will never end. But whatever we go through in life, we have that power. We can do all things through Christ. We can go on. Even if we can't run, we can walk. Even if we can't walk, we'll grow. But on our way forward, let's go forward, because this is the battlefield where we are challenged, but we need to continue trusting the one who says, I'll be with you, your bread and water will be sure. I'll defend you. I'll fight for you. All those promises made me to be able to go on, because I would stand on a promise and say, Lord, you said you are father to the fatherless. I've brought my fatherless children. They need fees. They need this. And true to his word, it has happened is according to God has promised us.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. This is an amazing story. Thank you so much, Mama, for sharing this story and giving us that charge, especially that let's keep going forward. If we cannot run, let's crawl. But whatever that we do, let's keep going forward. And I guess that's the word that I'm taking right there. Thank you so much, Mama, for coming through and doing this with me on this program. That is the Weekend Chapter. And wow, it's been a long time coming, but finally you were here. And boy, did you deliver. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to me.
Thank you, Marvin. It was such an honor. I hope it will minister to someone. I pray so.
Thank you so much, Mama. Thank you so much for joining us right here on Adventist World Radio, powered by the SID Media. That was Mrs. Maureen Gwenya, as you are telling us about life. And also, lastly, she did highlight about the organization that she has, and she's dealing with widows. Amazing stuff. Movers and shakers, that's what we do. We talk to the people who are making an impact in society. So stay with us right here on Adventist World Radio, powered by the SID Media.
You are listening to The Weekend Chapter on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.